Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone, and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have a really exciting guest joining us, you know, from Startup Nation. You know, we're going to be talking a lot about building, scaling, financing, all the good stuff that we like to hear. And some of the things that we're going to be diving in today is challenges in the early days, like, for example, fundraising, how to go about convincing people, the stresses and pressures of being a founder, you know, of any company. You know, nobody really talks about that. There's a lot, you know, stress and a lot of pressure that a founder undertakes. Also going from the early stages to really grow stages where you're thinking about scale, as well as having a culture where employees are not leaving, you know, which is really amazing. The teamwork and collaboration that this founder, you know, and his team are fostering, as well as navigating the current environment. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Ed Kovetz. Welcome to the show.
Hey. Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
So originally born there in Israel, you were born in a kibbutz with no car, nothing of that nature. So give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up?
Yeah, so I grew up in a kibbutz. For those who don't know what it is, it's like a small village where it's really like a community. Everything is shared. So believe it or not, you know, we didn't own our house or a car or anything. Everything was, you know, kind of belonged to everybody, which may sound pretty crazy to some people, but I can tell you as a child, it's, you know, it's actually great. It's a great environment to grow up in, and, you know, super friendly and safe and like a big family. You know, we did move out of there at some point, but it was a great childhood. You know, grew up with, a dad who's an engineer and a mom who's an artist. So all my life was kind of on a combination of art and science or tech, I guess, which still today I feel like I like both. Yeah, overall, great childhood.
So tell us about the army, because also going to the army there in Israel is mandatory. And
yeah,
I think that this gives you also great ethic, no, and discipline. I think that in your case too, it also allowed you to learn about management, because you were also learning, you know, there about managing teams, and you were in fact managing teams. So how was this experience for you as well?
Yeah, true. So, you know, in Israel, when we are 18, you go to the military, which obviously is something that I wish wasn't true, but it's something that we have to do and as a country. And you know, the only upside to it is yes, when you're 18, you actually get to experience, you get a lot of responsibility, you know, being in charge of really important things and managing people and leading very critical projects. I served in a unit called 8200, which is kind of like the NSA in the US. You know, it's a place where we focused on cybersecurity, cyber offense. I was there for a while, so I actually stayed there for extra time to become a manager or a commander. Eventually managed 5 teams that were doing this kind of, you know, cyber campaigns and research. And it was great. I got to, you know, learn so much and get amazing responsibility and work with some of the best people I ever met. So overall, it gave me a lot, and that's where I actually met some of the people I work with today.
And how was that transition to into building your company? Because after you came out of the army, you know, basically you got to work on government, on security, and things of this nature, which kind of like really gave you the exposure to what you wanted to build later on with identity security, you know, which is essentially, you know, some of the stuff that led you to what you're doing ultimately at the Silverford, you know, those sequence of events that needed to happen. So give us some, you know, walk through those sequences, you know, and how things unfolded towards, say, you becoming a founder ultimately.
Sure. So yeah, after the military, I went to work for some governments, as you mentioned. Worked with a few countries in Europe and Asia, and basically had you know, I guess the opportunity to design the national cybersecurity architecture for the entire country, which was amazing experience and opportunity. And by doing that, I got to see cybersecurity from a perspective that I think is pretty rare, because it wasn't looking at organizations, it was looking at the entire internet communication of a whole country, and really understanding what attacks look like in a much more kind of zoom out view. And what I saw there, which correlated with what I learned being on the offense side in the military, is that identity is really almost the go-to attack vector for cyber threat actors, because it's just easy. I mean, if I can you know, get someone in an organization to tell me the password, or I can somehow steal their credentials, I can log in through the front door, and why even bother doing anything else? You know, any more sophisticated attack if that is such an easy blind spot for most companies. So I saw that, but I think that what got me to want to do something in this field is the understanding that there are already so many solutions out there for identity security, and somehow that problem actually is just growing. So I really wanted to understand what is missing. You know, why is identity security not actually solving the problem? You know, I felt like I have some theories about it. By the way, one of the things I learned is, as soon as you start actually building a product and meeting customers, all of those theories become irrelevant, and you learn what is actually missing. But that was what got me to wanting to start that journey, is the understanding that there is a huge problem and it's not being solved.
So then for Silverford, you know, obviously, the company, the way that it has evolved and what it has come today is pretty remarkable. But I know that the early days, you know, were not easy, and they were full of challenges. Now, before we go into those challenges that I'd like to ask you about, you know, specifically when it comes to fundraising, for example, what is Silver for today? What is the business model, and how do you guys make money for the people that are listening to get it?
So Silverford is a company that brings identity protection everywhere, to every system, every user, every environment in the organization. And I think that it's something that we were able to bring to places that identity security just couldn't get to before. What I mean is, we built a product that can protect systems that couldn't be protected until today. A lot of critical systems, you know, legacy systems, non-human identities, command line tools, all kinds of things that were just considered blind spots that you couldn't secure. We built a platform that can bring identity security to all these places. We sell it to companies around the world. So we have teams in 15 countries today. So we operate in many markets. And we work with companies from very small ones to the largest companies in the world. We have, you know, several of the Fortune 25 companies even as customers. So it is becoming, I think, very successful, but it took a long time to get to this point. And again, before we go into the, you know, the beginning, I'll say yes, after this long road, we did get to a point where today the company is doing very well. You know, we are adding 100 new customers every quarter at this point, so the company is going really nicely. We just completed our Series D funding of $116 million. So yeah, I mean, today the company is really on a great direction to lead the identity security market.
And what is the total amount raised to date, Ted?
$222 million.
So now bring us to the beginning of raising, you know, all this money, no, to all these different financing cycles. I know that the first financing cycle was very difficult. You know, the early days of convincing people of being able to showcase that canvas with the same colors that you have in mind, you know, because obviously you don't have something tangible yet. So how has it been the experience from that moment all the way up until today? How have those cycles, you know, matured from one to the next?
Yeah, you're right. You know, when things are going well and at this stage, it's almost easy to forget the challenges of the beginning. And I feel like when I got started and I talked to entrepreneurs to get their advice, a lot of times people, you know, tell these amazing stories about how well everything is going and how easy it was. And I think that's something that I think is not a good thing for us as an industry. The fact that people don't share the challenges and the stress that comes with it, because then entrepreneurs who actually start building their companies feel like they are the problem or they are, you know, almost feeling like they're losers, right? Because it's not easy for them. I think that the truth is now that I'm talking to so many CEOs in our stage, it's not easy for anyone. And especially in the beginning, because you're coming with almost nothing, right? You don't have any real proof or a product or customers or anything to show. And you're trying to convince investors that you're going to build something amazing. It is challenging for anyone. And in our case, I mean, I came with me and my two co-founders, Yaron and Matan, we came with the perfect background, right? We all came from cybersecurity, military experience, experience in the industry. And still, it's very hard because, you know, investors are seeing so many startups, and for them to decide to invest in someone requires so many stars to align. I think that one of the biggest challenges was, you know, the fact that you need to convince someone that you're going to build something different in a market where there are already a lot of players, and investors are comparing you to so many other companies, and they're trying to figure out why would you be more successful than them, because, you know, and that is very hard to answer in the beginning because you don't have any proof. And honestly, the product, the idea that you have for the product is probably not the right one in the very beginning. I know that ours wasn't the right one. Only when you get started, you meet customers, you talk to them, you learn how to adjust. I mean, hopefully, if you do it the right way, I think you are flexible enough. So in the beginning, all you have is you, I mean, the team, and you know, the problem that you're trying to address that ideally should be a good problem that people understand. In our case, 7 or almost 8 years ago, identity security was not a very attractive problem for investors. I think today it is. Today people understand that identity, I mean, especially after COVID, right, with people working from anywhere, you know, using devices, maybe even be personal devices, I think people understand that there's no corporate network anymore, and identity is almost the last line of defense. But in the beginning, when we started, identity security was not a hot topic. It almost was a boring, old topic. So it was very hard. We got a lot of no's from tens of investors before we found someone who actually believed in us.
So what was that thing, also that journey to getting to product market fit, and in that moment where you finally experienced that you were turning a corner with the business?
So I think that the critical thing was us really listening to customers. It's so easy as an entrepreneur because you're so focused on convincing people that what you're building is the right thing, that you almost fall in love with your own idea. And the risk is that you may just hit a wall. You may just, you know, try to convince everybody that you are right and not actually listen. And I think that what helped is that at some point we realized, okay, with customers, it's not even about us pitching to them. We have to listen to what they actually want. And when customers told us that the product we were trying to build is probably not the right one, it's not solving the actual problem, it took us time, right? We did spend a few months fighting that uphill battle. But eventually we started listening and adjusted the product again and again and again until we got to the right product. Basically, in our case, we believed that the problem with identity security was that the security measures were not secure enough, right? Like, think about multi-factor authentication, for example. We thought that the problem is it's probably not secure enough, and this is why attackers are succeeding to breach organizations. Customers told us that's not our problem. These solutions are secure. Our problem is that these great security controls are just not available for so many of our systems. We have so many other systems that you cannot integrate modern identity security into. Now, it took us time to figure out that that is the actual problem and shift our entire focus and our product to that direction. Then it took us even more time to, you know, find the right solution. And I think that the point where we realized that we have it is only when the conversation started to become easy, when we were in front of customers and it stopped feeling like an argument or like a battle, and it started being, you know, the reaction from them was just so much better, and they really understood and they really agreed. And only then we started sensing, okay, this is becoming real, and we can actually start, you know, selling this. And then I think the critical point that you get to at some point is where not only you, the founder, can sell it, but you can actually bring in more team members who are successful in selling it. And that's where I feel like, you know, there's something here beyond, you know, some early stage product. There's starting to be signs of product market fit.
Hey, guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
And obviously, to make that happen, obviously, the team is key. And the culture that you guys have brought, you know, to the company there, teamwork, collaboration, you know, almost no churn when it comes to employees. I'm wondering too, like, how you guys were able to go about that. What were some of the critical pillars and the foundation, you know, that sustain on? And I guess also how did the experience of growing up in a kibbutz, you know, in that community, you know, feeling an aspect, you know, how you've gone about maybe bringing some aspects of that to that culture?
Yeah, I think that I believe that in order for a startup to be successful, it's all about the teamwork, because that is really your only advantage over the large companies, right? The large companies have more resources, more customers. The only thing you have is a team that works better together because it's a little smaller, because, you know, there's something about the culture that make the different departments actually partner instead of being enemies, like I think they are in some larger organizations almost. And to build that, I became almost obsessed with getting the different people to work as one team and not to fight inside the company, which is such a natural thing to do with, you know, politics and ego. These things are always, you know, trying to or starting to be created. And I think that I managed to not only focus on it myself a lot, but find other managers that share that mindset with me, that understand that in order for a company to succeed, we all need to be on one team. And that requires a lot of different things, right? It requires to create a culture where if things go wrong, you don't look at who to blame, but you actually just focus on how we all improve as a team, but not even care whose fault exactly it is, because that creates a lot of toxic conversations. Or, you know, create a culture where everybody help each other, even if it's not exactly the responsibility, but it's more about what do we need to achieve as a team. And it's about transparency, and it's about actually caring about employees where they need you. You know, in not where everything is good, but actually when things are bad and when an employee is in trouble. You know, the situations where true teamwork and true, I don't know, a culture where people actually care about each other is really tested. And I think that when you do that well, then employees also care about you, about the company. And I think that that's what you need. You need people to be happy with where they are and like the people that they work with and want to do something for them. Because my observation, at least, is that people don't really, I mean, they obviously come to work for a salary, but they don't go above and beyond for that. They only do that for people. They do that for the people around them because they want, you know, the team to succeed. And that's where, I mean, you can see the same, I think, in sport teams, right? People will go above and beyond for their team to be successful much more than they will do for, you know, for their salary or for the things that I think, some of them even believe that they are motivated by. I think that the people element is the crucial one. So we were able to create that, I feel, and we do have today a situation where, you know, very few people are leaving the company, and I think people are generally doing amazing things together as a team. And I hope that we'll be able to maintain that for as long as we can.
So thinking about the team here, investors, culture, everything, you know, obviously vision is a big driver of that. No? And in a world, let's say, where you were to go to sleep tonight and wake up and the vision of Silverfort is fully realized, what does that world look like?
So when we look at the identity market today, I think that the biggest problem is probably the fact that identity in most companies is built out of many silos. So a lot of companies have one identity solution for the on-prem, you know, the legacy environment, and one identity solution for this cloud, and one for that other cloud. And all of these different identities, I mean, you may have three different identities, but you're the same person. You're the same human that has these different identities. The way security works today is in each of these islands separately. And my vision for Silverfort is to be the company that finally creates that unified layer of security on top of all the silos of identity infrastructure. So we started this company from wanting to bring identity security to the places where it just doesn't exist, you know, legacy applications and industrial systems and service accounts and all these blind spots. We are gradually evolving into something that I think is a much bigger opportunity, and that's the unification of identity security. And the reason why I believe in that vision is if you look at other categories of security, let's say endpoint protection, you don't buy that from, you know, HP and Dell and Apple separately. You know, you buy it from one vendor that can protect all the endpoints, all these islands. And in identity, it's not the case, and I think it will be. And I think that we can be the leaders of that. We can be the company that actually builds that that connecting tissue, that's unified layer of security on top. And I believe that we are on the right direction to do it. We're growing, you know, more than 100% year over year for several years now. I think we are on the right direction. But obviously, you know, we need to keep doing it and not mess up. We talked earlier about all the challenges. They're still true today. I mean, there's still a lot of challenges every day, still a lot of, you know, pressure and stress that comes with the job, still a lot of things that we need to solve. But overall, I think that we have a great team, we have a great product, we have amazing customers, and I think that we are on the direction to achieve it. So I'm actually more excited today than I ever was at Silverfort about where it's going.
So getting into that direction of growth and scale is not easy, right? And shifting from the early stages where you're putting fires every day, you know, you're doing everything yourself, you know, there's not a lot of people. So then all of a sudden, you know, like you have all the unit economics figured out, you know, you have the right people. What does it look like when you shift from early stage to growth stage? What are some of the kinks and hurdles, you know, you need to overcome in order to get it to that direction, you know, where things are cruising, you know, which is where you're now?
Yeah, I think this is a great question. And I think that I'm obviously still learning a lot of it, but I think that there are three key elements for it. And it's you know, product, go-to-market, and people. I think that, I mean, we talked a bit about people, right? And I think that the challenge there is just how do you maintain that culture when the company is growing and there's so many people and people don't even know each other anymore in some cases. And you know, there's a lot I think you can still do there, and to create that culture, to spread it, which requires a lot of time and investment, right? I spend a lot of my personal time on that, on the people, resolving a lot of issues myself, working with the managers. A lot of it is really up to the managers, because I can stand and you know, come to your to your show and say all these things, but they wouldn't even matter if the actual team leaders are not doing them in the reality. So there's a lot of work with the management, but I think it's doable, because I think we at least are still feeling that culture, and I hope we'll keep it. In terms of the product, I think that the big challenge there that we are in the process of today is, how do you move from a single product to an actual platform that has, you know, multiple product modules on it, that each has its own, you know, product market fit and an ability to solve a big problem for customers. We are doing it, but it's not just about innovation. It's also about building your organization in the right way to support multiple products and to build multiple products. And it's about not letting yourself become kind of, a lot of companies at certain size, they stop innovating. They just become kind of slow. They just support their existing product and they lose that. And then another startup comes from the, you know, from behind and passes them. So making sure that you still invest a lot of your resources in new products and in innovation is critical. And then go to market, that's maybe the biggest challenge in scale. I think that there are a lot of things there. I think to me, one of the key strategies there is channel partnerships. I think that you can sell the product yourself in the early days, and you may hire more salespeople and get a bit more wins. But if you really want to scale, it's all about partnerships to me. And that can be the, you know, channel partners that we invested in from very early, and we are fully invested in that strategy. It can be technology alliances. We partner also with cyber insurance companies who recommend our product to clients in order to get insured. A lot of partnerships, we invest in it a lot. And that does, I mean, it takes time. That's the challenging part. You with every partnership, you feel like the first year or two, you're just doing a lot of work and there's no result. I think that's why a lot of people give up almost, you know, other founders I'm talking to. Our approach was always, you know, if that happens, you just lean in even more. Like you invest even more, and at some point it happens. At some point, it's starting to bring results, and then it just explodes. The other thing is, I found over time that one of the mistakes I did early on was my message was very complex. We explained our technology, which is a very complex technology, in a way that we as founders could explain to someone, but there was no chance for a salesperson to explain that, or even to our customer to explain it to his own team members. It was just a very complex technical story. And sharpening that message into something simple that people understand, like, we can bring identity security to these systems that don't support it, that you couldn't protect before, and not spending an hour explaining the technology, you know, too early in the conversation, that allowed the message to become a little easier to communicate and to spread, and for the, you know, for the company to scale better. So a lot of these kind of things. That, you know, obviously I'm still learning, right? It's I think a big part of it is knowing that you don't know everything, and never becoming too arrogant about, hey, I figured it out. I feel like part of the thing that allowed us to continue to success is knowing that we still have a lot to learn.
Work in progress always. And yeah, exactly. So let me ask you this. Let's say I bring you back in time. I put you into a time machine and I bring you back in time to 2016, to that moment where you're thinking about a world, you know, where you could bring something of your own. Let's say you're able to give a chat, you know, or to have a chat with that younger self, and you're able to give that younger self one piece of advice before launching a business. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
So I think that I would have told myself that, you know, it's just a hard journey, and to not be scared about the fact that there are challenges on the way. You know, it is difficult. I think that some of the frustration and the stress of doing this, of building a company, of building, you know, something out of nothing, is the feeling that, you know, you are struggling and not knowing that this is just the way it is. It's hard for anyone. I know today, talking to other entrepreneurs, that this is just the way it is. But I think that in the early days, I felt like it's not going to work out. It's so difficult. It's so stressful. Things are not going the right way. And obviously, you know, eventually we crossed these challenges and we were able to solve it. I think that one of the most important thing I think for every entrepreneur is the ability to just, you know, get back up after every failure, after every challenge. But that's much harder to do when you feel like these challenges are about you doing something wrong and not knowing that this is just the way it is. It's just a very hard journey to build a company. So I think I would have told myself a bit about how it is and that it is normal and this is just the way it is and to continue to, you know, move forward. I think that is probably the most general advice I would give myself. Of course, there are other advices I would give myself on you know, how to position correctly in the market and maybe save myself a couple of years on the way. But you know, so much of this is just the psychological aspect of you know, continuing to push forward, that I think that is probably the most important thing is just knowing that this is how it is and it's hard and it's going to work out if you keep trying and if you believe.
So for the people that are listening here, I would love to reach out and say hi. What is the best way for them to do so?
So first of all, I'm more than happy to talk to anyone who has, you know, any questions, whether it's, you know, obviously about our product, but also just about, you know, running a company, starting a company. I'm happy to help. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn, Head Kovetz. Okay, Head is H-E-D. Kovetz is K-O-V-E-T-Z. So feel free to reach out. And again, I feel like when I got started, so many people helped me. Other entrepreneurs were kind enough to give me advice and help me and introduce me to people. And I'm happy to do the same for others. And of course, if anyone is listening and want to learn more about our product, then definitely talk to me or go to our website, silverfold.com, to learn more.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an honor to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you. Great to talk to you. And again, thank you for inviting me.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening and see you at the next episode.